All right, Justin, I guess this is going to be a choose your own adventure in terms of which cold open do you want. We can talk about the aliens in Arizona that people saw, or we can talk about one of the best meals I ate this whole year.
Definitely the best meal you ate, because the alien thing, we already knew that was happening. I mean, come on now, they're everywhere.
So last night, me and some friends went to a restaurant in the city called Kubo. Which is a Filipino restaurant.
Kubo.
Where they do something. Oh, man. I don't even know. What is this even called?
Is it Kubo and the Two Strings?
That is a film that every single time we looked this up, we were like, is it Kubo and the Two Strings? there is a type of meal that you can order in like Filipino restaurants and stuff like that, where basically it's not even on their website, I don't think. They line the table in like banana leaves, and then they just plop a fuck ton of food on the table and you just eat it with your hands.
Oh, okay. What is it just called?
I don't know what it's called.
Table dump.
I see, that doesn't sound appetizing. Let me
you get Filipino one free dump at your table.
Food
boodle?
Table.
Is it a boodle?
Maybe boodle?
Boodle dining. While most Filipinos today eat using a spoon and fork, the traditional way of eating is kamayan, or with
kamayan.
Kamayan. The term kamayan can be used to describe the act of eating by hand, but a traditional kamayan meal is a feast served family style, usually over banana leaves. What's in the menu? Fried pamano, salt and peppered shrimp, baked mussels, Filipino sausage, pork adobo ribs, sweet pork, crispy chicken strips, chicken egg roll, mango, tomato, and onions, green beans with shrimp paste, tuna ceviche.
Didn't have that one.
Lycon sisig, panchet, garlic rice, fruit basket. A fruit basket.
Fruit basket was fucking great.
They just put a fruit basket on the mukbang.
It was a boodle, not mukbang. they took a pineapple and they sliced it in half like long ways, and then they just like hollowed it out and filled it with pineapple and apples, and so like the apples like soaked in the pineapple juice. It's fucking great. What I'm getting at here is I had this meal. Have you ever eaten a meal like no silverware that like
medieval times
that like normally similar sort of thing. I had never done that before. Okay, other than like medieval times, but like it was wild. It felt so like, it took me a second to like get into it because I felt like I was being really impolite. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because like what are you supposed to do? Like your hands just get all messy, you know?
So it was $59 per person plus a 20% tip. At a certain point, can't they just include the tip into that $59 per person?
Where was that? At Kubo?
Yeah.
I believe the tip was included in our meal.
And then a minimum of 4 guests, and you need 2 days advance notice. So this was a plan that you guys had to boodle.
We did plan it. This was our second annual. We call it the Chrissy Tradition. It's a Christmas tradition.
Love it.
Me and my friends. Because last year we went to like a progressive sushi dinner. Do you know what I mean by that? Like where you sit down and you basically. Oh man, that'd be so sick. No, you sit down and you like.
It's regressive.
You just like, you pay whatever the money is, and then like the chef just brings it out to you and you don't order anything. They just make you what they think is going to be good.
Oh, damn.
It felt exquisite and it felt luxurious. And then, so this year we were, me, Dave and Kevin were like, what do we do? And Dave was like, we do this Filipino thing. It's like, yeah, totally.
Boodle it is. My wife often wants to do a version of, what was that, Chopped? Where we get some random ingredients and then we have like 30 minutes to make a meal. The problem is she's good at cooking and I am not. So I think whatever I make from now on, if we do that, I'm just going to boodle it, you know?
Just throw it on the table.
Yeah, just throw it on the table. What are you making? Oh, it's a boodle. It's a traditional.
It's a kamayan boodle.
Yeah, it's a Filipino dish. So I'm very cultured when I'm boodling.
I'll say this. We did that for my dad. We did the Chopped thing.
Oh, and you boodled it?
Yeah, he did not boodle it. He did fuck it up really bad. He did a bad job. It was terrible. We did it twice to him because did the first time.
And it was
and then
so
we did,
bad
like,
the
second,
first time that you're like.
First time it was terrible. Second time he was like, I was ready for it. He's like, I knew. We surprised him with it. both times. But yeah, dude, can I just say, are you an adventurous eater?
Yeah.
I sat down and was just like, whatever this is, I'm going to eat it. You know what I mean? Like whatever this is, I'm down.
I love getting Indian cuisine, but I don't know what to order. So I'm lucky to have like my wife who will just like order, and whatever she gets is fantastic. Whatever sauce I'm dipping stuff in, it doesn't matter where you're putting it. It's just really good. I think this would be something I would try easily.
It was a really good time.
What was your favorite part of the boodle?
It had to have been the baked mussels.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it was mussel comes out just like, you know, in two halves. And I think it had like a cracked egg in it or something like that. It was baked. It was like very, very smooth. It was delightful.
The first time you did make an audible sound when I was listing off the ingredients, other than correcting my pronunciation, was when I said crispy chicken strips you made. like that was the first time you were like, were they that good?
They were pretty good, dude.
All right.
They were very good. I mean, the pancit was good. I mean, like all of it. I mean, all of it was just. Like I just love a lot of food and I love like I had never heard of or I never had like some of these things before, you know what I mean? But like sitting down, if you know that you're sitting down and you're sitting in front of good food, it doesn't matter what it is, I'm going to eat
it. Oh yeah.
You know, and I'm open to anything. I'm actually funny enough, I don't know if I told you this. I'm going to the Philippines in February.
Oh, are you going to go to every restaurant and be like, "Boodle me up?"
Well, I'm going with my friend Dave, who was there today, or when we did this yesterday, and he was like, "Dude, you're so ready." because he's Filipino, he's been there before, and he's like, "I was like, yeah, man, I'm so down, because I'm just like I'm open to trying anything, you know what I mean?"
Oh yeah, specifically, but as you said, specifically good food. If it's good, I will most likely like it, except quail.
You don't like quail?
I tried at a very expensive restaurant. I got quail three ways, and each way was more disgusting than the last. So I think I can honestly tell you, I'm not a quail fan because I went to a good restaurant and I had it three ways. I tried three different ways of it and it just did not do me. And it was quite possibly the worst meal I've ever eaten and paid that much for.
A raw quail egg on sushi is so fucking good.
But a quail
that's different
versus very the different. Quail. You know what I mean?
Can I tell you the thing that I'm like nervous about?
Go ahead.
It is in line with what we're talking about here. So in going to the Philippines, like I said, I'm down to try anything. I'm going to try balut. Are you familiar? Don't look it up. Don't look it up. It's really gross.
Balut. Did I spell it right?
B-A-L-O-O-T.
B-A-L-O-O-T. It's a card trick.
It is a fertilized chicken embryo.
I couldn't eat that. There's a limit. Like I'm adventurous. But that
is B-L-U-T.
No, it's balut food. And then.
Yeah, with a U, not two O's. It is like street food or like bar food. I'm going to have to try it because I will try anything. I have to try it. Like, I'm just like.
It's going
to
have to be at a fancy restaurant. If it were at a fancy restaurant.
I don't think it's a fancy restaurant.
And I had balut three ways, I might be able to tell you if I'm good or bad with it. But if I'm just going off a street vendor, I don't know if that's my level of trying it.
I was told it's like that good, like 2 a.m. food. Like 2 a.m. you're kind of drunk. Friday night food.
You mean pizza?
No, I mean Hitbox. Welcome back to Hitbox episode number 222, the old 222. My name is Peter Hunspitek, and joining me as always is my wonderful friend and co-host Justin Makovich. Justin, how you doing? How's your Thanksgiving? Not bad?
What do you bring to Thanksgiving when you go to your family's house? That's what I need to know.
So every year, and I think we talked about this a little bit in our bonus episode, we do, to get into Thanksgiving, you have to bring like a dessert. So this year I brought a cookie butter pie, which is like, it's just a pie made out of, have you ever had cookie butter?
Oh, have I had cookie butter? Oh my God. Oh yeah.
So it's cookie butter with the, you know, what are they called? Nabisco? No.
Nutella?
The chips that the cookies you get.
The Biscoff.
Biscoff, yeah. Excuse me. Yeah. Biscoff cookies. So that was what I brought this year. It was a hit.
How much leftover was there?
Well, we left them there. there was maybe a fifth of it left at Elena's family, and then I didn't look because we kind of had to run after dessert was served to get to Elena's for my family.
Yeah, we did the two things. So for the first half, my wife made like a very delicious vegetarian stuffing. Are you okay? Yeah. Are you honestly okay?
Yeah, I'm drinking a drink that's kind of bad.
We got to power through, right?
It's a poppy ginger lime. Mm. I think it's quite bad, but it's kind of the
colors bed I made. Are bold.
Yeah, it tastes like that.
Yeah.
Like, it's not good. But tell me, so she made a vegetarian what?
A vegetarian stuffing. And it was one of those things that was hard for me to, like, not eat beforehand because she took sourdough bread. So we had a bunch of sourdough bread in the house, taunting me. And she had corn muffins that she made.
Ooh.
And they were just laying there. And I'm, like, walking in one night before. And I'm like, I want those. But I couldn't eat them because they were for the stuffing. Really good, though. And then we went to my sister's house afterwards, and I didn't want to bring something like overly aggressive, and I normally bring Jell-O. I brought raspberry Jell-O with raspberries and marshmallows on top just to make it like nice and fun. But I was thinking it would be good because we ate a full meal at my wife's family's, and then we went to my side of the family's Thanksgiving, and it was at 7 o'clock at night, and I thought it was going to be like, you know, we get in near the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
Except we got in
right at the start
when they started. And let me tell you, Thanksgiving food's some of my favorite food.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how you feel after one meal?
Oh, I know how I feel after one meal.
Then you add
if I've done it right.
Then you add a second meal on top of that. And I try to hold back, but I started getting the sweats, and I needed to drink water, and then I drank water, and then I got too full, and then I was too full, and I was, like, very uncomfortable. Like, at one point, I had to lie down on the ground just to, like, stretch it all out and make sure that I was doing okay because I was not doing so hot with my tummy afterwards. And then I proceeded to eat more than my body weight for the next 3 days because that's how it works after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I ate a fuck ton, and then we had leftovers for dinner tonight. It was delightful.
Yeah, we got a few more. I think I finished my turkey sandwiches, but yeah.
Ooh, see, that'll do it.
Is there anything quite like a turkey sandwich on bread with mayo and some salt? Just a very shitty sandwich you just kind of throw together.
Yeah, it's a little dry because it's just old.
Yeah, but you overcompensate with way too much mayo.
Way too much mayo on accident, and you're kind of like, this is a nightmare.
Yeah.
I'd fuck that right up.
Yeah, right. I'd eat it. I wouldn't stop myself. I'd do it.
I just fucking said that I would eat balut. Like, I'm not turning my nose up for that mayo and turkey on bread, Justin. I think that's fair. Well, Justin, glad to hear you had some good holidays there. Let me give you a quick preview of what's coming up in the news. There is no news.
Oh.
I think this is going to be a common theme over the next few weeks here. Although
next week's going to be pretty big, man.
Okay, I was gonna say I forgot that next week is TGA, so like 2 weeks we'll have news from that, and also I'll be able to tell you all about it because I'll be there.
Oh yeah, we'll get the first hand account.
Exactly. But I think for this week and next, there's gonna be pretty light news wise. We've got some interesting stuff to talk about this week. Before we get into that, though, I'd love to tell our listeners so they can join us on Discord. The link to that is in the description of this episode. They can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/hitboxpod by becoming a $1 podcast producer or a $3 deluxe podcast producer like Jane Old, GKS, and Josh Durham. Every single week, those deluxe podcast producers get an additional 30-minute bonus episode, which is sort of a companion. This week's episode is sort of a companion to the main episode this week. Today, we're going to be just going through some of the best games of 2024, according to Metacritic.com. We're going to do that in the main episode. And then in the bonus episode, I have rated and scored every single video game I played this year on my backlogged account. Backlogged is kind of like letterboxed, but for video games. So if you're interested in that, you can check out my page, but also we're going to be talking about them all. I think it's going to be an interesting conversation about how we look at and score games. But if you can't support us there, that's fine. You can follow us on Twitter at HitboxPod or rate this episode in your podcast player of choice. Justin, do you want to join me in the Metacritic Roundup?
Let's go!
Metacritic Roundup.
Just one game in the Metacritic Roundup this week. I think it's going to be this and then Indiana Jones. And then I think we're kind of out in terms of what's coming out for the rest of the year.
I better fix my open critic, my fantasy critic
Your fantasy draft? Yeah.
I gotta drop a couple games and pick up a couple more.
Well, the game that is in the Metacritic roundup today is Infinity Nikki. This game will be out on the 5th, so the day after Hitbox Day this week. Justin, are you familiar with Infinity Nikki? It scored a 78 on the PC. It's unscored on iOS, PS4, and PS5.
No, I have not. What is Infinity Nikki?
This is an open-world dress-up game.
Oh, you had me at open-world dress-up game. Giggle, giggle.
Well, that's good, because that was the last bit of what I said. This was shown off at a PlayStation showcase at some point, or maybe a State of Play, a recent one. I think for the summer one, they showed this thing off. Infinity Nikki is like, it's just an open world dress up game where the point of the game is to explore, hang out with these little cat creatures, and then like find different outfits for your character to wear. It's very stylish. It's very cute. It's kind of in the same vein as what's that series that Elena likes? Style Savvy.
I wish she just shouted it out without you having to think of it. Like she was waiting.
No, she's.
For you to like throw to her at that.
Now she's out tonight.
You get a phone call.
Style Savvy.
Fashion Dreamer came out earlier this year.
Did she play?
Which was she did. It was the spiritual successor to Style Savvy. But it scored a 78. It's interesting. It's not a particularly deep game, but at least that's what it seems like. This blurb from Twinfinite says, if you're looking for a heavy-duty game to sink a few thousand hours into, this isn't for you. If you want to simply spend a few hours exploring a charming world with plenty of puzzles and platforming, Infinity Nikki might just be your dream. I don't know. This game looks kind of charming and cute. It's called the coziest open world game, according to its little blurb in the trailer there. But I mean, do you have any interest in something like this?
I gotta be honest. I wonder if my wife would like this game. A cozy open world game where you can kind of explore. I think would be kind of fun. And like they're doing the little poses. It's reminding me a little bit of Animal Crossing when they're doing the little outfit poses in there.
Elena would fuck with this heavy.
Oh yeah, I mean, is she washing a ferret or some kind of like woodland creature in this video?
A lot of woodland creatures in this. A lot of cats, a lot of frogs, a lot of like rabbit adjacent sort of guys, sheep and the like, and then like random like Pokemon looking things. I don't know. Like I think this game looks like cute and charming, but probably a skip for me at least right now.
I just read a comment on a YouTube video. Cut this if you feel like it. It says, I might not be a girl, gay, or they, but I will be playing.
And dude, you know what I'll appreciate about that? Video games bring us together,
yep,
right?
Yep. That was from Dad Boy 1516. You can cut that if you want to, or let that boy know we support his choices.
Well, I'll say this about like video games. I know it's kind of a joke, but like something I appreciate about games is they do let you explore interests that might not be something that you normally would be kind of open about. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like someone might play this game who might not care about fashion or anything like that, but it's like still have a good time and then discover like, oh, I actually really like aesthetics and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
I gotta say, like, these comments are pretty, like, positive.
Is this just under
a
trailer?
I'm on a Eurogame review of it. Eurogamer.
Infinity Nikki.
And, like, they all seem pretty, like, yeah.
Let's see here.
That's pretty funny.
I'm a straight dude, and my fiance are hyped for this game.
Bro Lap said, it's funny seeing the comments saying, I'm straight and I'm playing this. Like, girl, take it easy.
but also, here's the thing, too. Like, I think that so much of, like, gamer culture is all about, like, well, you have to be straight.
Yeah,
you gotta be, like, a real cool dude. And, like, but, like, dude, like, kick your shoes off, play some Infinity Nikki. You know what I mean? It's better than Nikkei, Goddess of Wisdom. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
That's the gacha hentai game made by the people who make Stellar Blade.
Yeah, I knew that.
Oh, did you? Okay,
I was supportive of it.
You love it.
$24,000 and my gay ass is playing that.
Yeah, but like it is so funny, like the way people talk about this in the comments here about like people just like having to say like, well, I am straight, but I am interested in this game. It's like, that's okay. You don't have to be gay to like this.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like you don't even like, you don't have to be a woman to like this. You don't have to be anything to like this. You just have to like be interested in fashion and whatever, you know,
and like platforming and slight, like a cozy open world. Like to me, sometimes after a hard day of work, the last thing I want to do is metaphor. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, like this seems like a very fun game to just relax with and like sit down with. You know what I mean?
All right, well,
and I'm not even gay. yeah, so there you go, Infinity Nikki. I don't know. Like, I like a game that seems like it's got something positive to be about. You know what I mean? And like, just the joy of dress and stuff like that. I can get behind.
And let me tell you something. I might like Eurogamer's community pretty much.
Yeah, can you imagine? I mean, I guess like, I would love if that's the type of person who commented on my videos.
Like, just like happy, positive people.
Yeah,
a little insecure about their masculinity, but like they're still like going for it.
But like we work on that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like instead I'm just like deleting all these like comments, but like I don't want to have you. Like I can't have you saying this. Sometimes people comment like, they deleted my last comment, so much for freedom of speech. And I'm always like, you actually don't have freedom of speech in my comment sections.
Because they're my comments.
Yeah, and like you can't be a hateful dipshit. Like, anyway, yeah, so there you go. Infinity Nikki.
Just to continue my positivity for Eurogamer's comment section, I'm on the Stalker 2 Heart of Chernobyl review. And it does seem, again, pretty positive. Remember, there are no bugs or glitches, just anomalies, smiley face.
Dude, that's like, shout out to Eurogamer.
Yeah, 10 out of 10 for me. This game is a masterpiece. Yeah.
And those are just like the comments people are saying?
Yeah.
See, I wish. I wish.
One day.
Anyway.
One day.
One day. We'll get there. Justin, you played some Dragon Age Veilguard?
I did. I played probably, I actually had some significant time to play it. I kind of made a day of it on Saturday, which is kind of nice to sit down with a game, which I haven't done in a while, just to kind of like just enrapture myself with it. Yeah. And I think right now I'm like 30 hours in, and I can't tell if that's me actually having played 30 hours or me have like left the game on for 30 hours while I fell asleep.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't feel like I'm that far in the game. Like I kind of looked at like the progression of where I was and the progression of some of my characters, and I feel like I'm more in the like 15, 20 maybe hour range than 30. But like as the game is progressing, I want to go back and say what a bad job this game does at setting up context. The context of what happened before in the old Dragon Age games, context of who your character is, context of how all these different factions are, context just in general about getting connected with this world that you're in. But I do feel like as the game is going on, once you start to get to know these factions a little bit and get to know your characters and what their associations with the factions are, because all of your companions in the game essentially are aligned with one of the different factions in there. You have 8 different characters with, I think, 8 different factions, maybe one or two less, or 6 factions or whatever. But they kind of really start to tie together the world a little bit more. And while the heart of the story is pretty simple, it's basically 2 elven gods have been released based on a ritual that you interrupted, and everyone kind of blames you, but you're also the only one trying to fix it. That's really like not the driving factor of the game. It's kind of like talking through the other characters and stuff like that and getting to know them. I think I said this on another podcast. I heard it described as more of a friendship simulator rather than a like a RPG game that you're truly making your decisions and kind of controlling what happens to the world. Because really, it's like, which one of these people do I want to hang out with? And once you hang out with them, their specific individual companion quests, I wouldn't say are like groundbreaking in terms of what you're doing in them, but getting to know the characters a little bit more and actually like finding out about like them and their backstories are kind of cool. And I actually came to a choice that is kind of consequential, but maybe not. This is probably pretty early in the game, the biggest like decision that you have to make. Basically, there's like these dragons that are attacking two towns. And two of your companions, each one of those companions lives in one of those towns. And they come up to you and they're like, you gotta help. One companion's like, there's a bunch of civilians here. It's just a town. Please come and help me. The other one is like, if they take over this city, they're going to be in charge of the capital and they're going to be in charge of everything. It's going to be a problem. You need to help me. And you basically have to make a choice. Who do you save? And the town that you save gets saved. The town that you don't basically becomes corrupted with like this like blight disease that's corrupting everything. And it kind of changes that world. You basically have to go back in and like find all your waypoints again and like re-explore the new world. But also that companion character changes drastically. They go from being like just a general character that has supportive and offensive abilities to just a pure, I forget what they called it, like a darkened character. And they basically, they don't support you anymore and they just become this like offensive powerhouse. And to me, that was kind of cool. It felt like it had drastic consequences to the world to a little bit, but also affected your companions. So I hope they do more of that stuff, but really weave it to a point where those decisions actually matter. But I have this sneaky suspicion that it's not going to really matter. Because you basically get these reputations for each of the factions, and based on your reputation level is how helpful they're going to probably be in the final encounter, which I'm assuming is like very similar to like Mass Effect 3. You know how you have to get your galactic map readiness up?
Yeah.
It's kind of like that too. So instead of like preventing that group from helping me, it just made it harder by making me have to do more side quests to get their faction level up a little bit. So I don't ultimately think it's going to change much other than the fact it slightly changed the character from that town and it makes me have to do a few more side quests in there.
So are you getting to the end? Is that like,
I don't know
what that's leading
to? Or? I don't think I'm close to the end, to be frank. I think this is probably like one of the first like branching paths that you have to take. Because after that, then you finish up your party. It's a part, you have basically seven companions that you can choose from. So once you finish that mission, then you get the other two because you need those other two characters to help you fight the dragons that are attacking now. Dragon Age, you know what I mean? You gotta get that title in there. And then like each character has their own like loyalty missions, I guess you could say. The first couple seem to be very much like, walk with me as I light up these torches. And then the next one seems to be a little bit more like exploratory combat focused. And then the final one, I'm assuming, is going to be like a big bad that you fight that is like solving their story in some way. So I think the biggest problem with the game is the pull of the story isn't really getting me to go forward. It's kind of just like checking off boxes and doing like some character things rather than like, I'm really excited to find out where this story goes, if that makes sense. But along the way, the combat's fun. I'm like level 25, almost 30-ish. And I feel like I'm a mage, and the combat choices I have are actually pretty varied now. You get specializations. You get three specializations that you can choose from, and you can only have one activated at a time. But also, like, the map of upgrades is so huge that it really feels like you have to make some decisions about what you want to prioritize with your character. They have, like, a pretty okay loot system that can kind of, like, make your specific character focus on different types of damages and stuff like that. So there's a lot of good things and a lot of good carrots to keep me moving forward. I just wish the story was a bigger carrot that I actually cared about.
Sure.
And
that makes sense.
Let me tell you this right now. I fucking hate the main character.
What do they call it?
Rook.
Rook.
Just not a very like engaging character. And no matter how you try to make him, whether it's like stern, compassionate, or jokey, they just all kind of feel like, did I make the right choice? They all kind of feel like the same thing, but like I don't really feel like I'm changing much. But is it one of those games that I say you got to play for 20 hours before you see the light around the at the end of the tunnel? Maybe, but I'm worried I'm gonna have to play another 30 hours to finish it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, are you going to stick with it, you think? It sounds like you're at least enjoying it.
I mean, it is a pretty good It's even hard to call it a brain off game because it's chatty enough that it's not a brain off game.
A lot of story there, right?
Yeah, a lot of just like talking with characters. It makes me wish this is a very me thing. I wish you could hold the PlayStation Portal and move through the dialogue options with one hand instead of having to like you got to select with like the arrow on your left hand and then select with your right hand. I wish I could just do that all in the same controller so I could have my phone in one hand or like eat a snack during the cutscene.
Yes.
And it's not that I'm not paying attention. It's that sometimes they're long enough that I like just want to eat like my turkey sandwich that I'm trying to eat while I'm listening to this or God forbid, go to the bathroom.
Sure.
But
I mean, I did the same thing with Golden Idol, where I just play that on my lunch breaks.
And your poop breaks, too.
Yeah, exactly. You got it. Yeah. Justin, I played two things this week. The first thing is called GTFO. Have you heard of this game?
Get the fuck out of here. No, I haven't.
Yeah. It's like an extraction shooter game where it's like four-player co-op. You get dropped into like this, like, horrified like overrun facility that's got like all these like zombie monsters. They kind of look like the monsters from Callisto Protocol. Did you play that one? I don't think so, right?
No.
We're just like humanoid monsters that are kind of like fucked up with a bunch of teeth and stuff like that. It's very challenging where basically you have to just like use like the equipment that you find in the run and things like that in order to complete objectives and then like extract. I played just like, I don't know, like 2-3 hours of it with our friend Josh. It seems interesting. It seems like a fun little co-op game. I'm playing on PC. Fun little co-op game to just, you know, do some extraction stuff with, which I find to be a interesting genre. But like I said, it's very difficult, which we didn't necessarily know when we started. Like you have to like really, really count your like bullets and stuff like that because like you just don't have enough to like get in like prolonged firefights and stuff like that, and also like enemies will kill you pretty quickly. Like you have to worry about like even like the base enemies, you know what I mean?
It's a very sit up game instead of a lay back and chat kind of game with your friends.
It is not Fortnite where you're just kind of like chat and then you have like 2 minutes kind of like locking in and like chat. It's interesting though. I'm gonna hopefully play more of it over the next few weeks here and report back.
So I gotta admit, when you said that,
yep,
I went into our good friend Metacritic, typed it in. I want to see what the game was. And when I typed it in, like it's a reasonable 78 Metacritic score. But there was another game that popped up. Only two games popped out when I typed in GTFO.
GTFO.
The second one is called Boobs or GTFO. And that game summary is responded, "You're Amy, a simple 2D girl with a hot 3D girlfriend who had been kidnapped by an evil mastermind who has locked her in a cage." That's all we got.
I'm going to do an incognito search.
Okay. I am on my home computer, so GTFO videos.
So an error is encountered when processing your request. You must be logged in to view this community hub on Steam. I'm not going to do it. Oh man, these are actually, I'm gonna just exit out of this now.
While you're doing that, I'm just gonna put a quick little image in the chat for you.
Oh no. Yeah, I don't quite
understand it, but like that's definitely I put it in there.
Yeah. No, so I didn't play that. I did play GTFO, though. And like I said, it's interesting enough. I think we're going to play more of it and see where it gets us. Some of the weapons are pretty, feel pretty cool. Just like very futuristic-y, like just like Halo stuff, you know, but interesting enough at the very least.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Boobs or GTFO, Peter recommends and we'll play more of. He said that.
Nope, just GTFO, I believe, is the title.
Or Boobs.
The next game I played, Justin, is called I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream. Are you familiar with I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream, the book?
No, actually.
It's not a book. It's a short story, rather. It's from the 1960s. Oh. It's a short story.
Scary.
Who is this by? Like, Harlan Ellison. He's a science fiction author. This book, was published in March 1967. This is a short story about Basically, the premise is in the Cold War, China, Russia, or the Soviet Union, rather, and the United States were all making like supercomputers to try and like calculate like all this sort of stuff. And then one of their supercomputers gained sentience and like became like this, like got really, really smart and wiped out all of humanity except for five people. And it has kept these five people alive for 109 years. It doesn't let them die.
Damn.
It just like keeps like reviving them and doing all this stuff to them. They don't age, but he does. Am is the name of the robot, the computer that like tortures them. And Am basically like just constantly is torturing them and hurting them and all this sort of stuff. And so the five people, one of the survivors has a dream. They don't really eat that much. Like they only eat like rotting food and stuff like that Am gives them. And one of them has a dream that there's these ice caves that are like hundreds of miles away that if they walk to, they're going to find canned food. Do you have any interest in reading this? I just spoil how this ends.
You can spoil it. I'm kind of interested. So I don't think I'm going to read it, but I'm engrossed.
I went, I'll say this. I went to the library, checked this out and read it. I never read, you know what I mean? Like I read this short story in like an hour. It's like 25 pages. It's pretty short. And so they basically, it's about their journey to get there. And as they get like tortured by Am. Also, this was written in a single night by this author while he was on a drug trip, and it reads like that because it's all like sentence fragments and it's like there's some weird shit that goes on and whatever. But so they eventually get there after being tortured and whatever, and they find this canned food that this guy had the dream about. But the ultimate irony is they have no can opener. So one of them starts to go crazy. One of them got kind of like transformed partially into a gorilla by Am as an experiment. And so he starts going crazy and starts eating the face of one of the other guys. And then the main character, Ted, kind of like has this realization where he like gets very calm for a single moment and he realizes how to escape. And the escape is that he just has to kill everyone really fast so that Am can't like rejuvenate everyone. And so he like uses like the icicles, like the stalactites and stalagmites in the cave to kill everyone. And before he can finally kill himself, Am captures him and transforms him into like an amorphous blob. So he can't eat, he can't move, he can't do anything. He's just forever kept alive because Am just hates humanity so much. And so it ends by him saying, "I have no mouth and I must scream." Hmm. So that's the book. What "I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream" is a little bit more known for, however, is its video game adaptation from 1995.
Oh, no.
Which was designed and voiced by Harlan Ellison, the author of the book.
Oh.
So it's a point-and-click adventure game where basically you play as each of the five characters and you choose which of the five you want to be and you go on these little adventures. I don't know how it ends. I haven't finished it yet. But I started playing it and it's upsetting and it's horrible. That's also like an old ass game. But it's interesting that like a lot of like there's not a lot to the book, to the short story. There's like not much there. It's really, really simple. And you're making a face. What's this face?
I'm just clicking through the game.
It's pretty upsetting. There's some very horrific stuff in there. It's not a very, there's one woman who's been kept alive and believe it or not, it's not a very kind tale to the woman. some pretty horrific stuff happens to her. Like I said, a lot of the actual like short story is pretty light on details and stuff like that. But the game fills in a lot more of the details of the story. And it's kind of interesting because it's this like video game adaptation almost that is actually like runs in tandem with the actual text of the story of the short story. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's kind of cool. How did you get onto this?
Fun question. Okay, fun okay, question. Okay, okay, okay. Similar to what you asked me about how I found click holding. So I have known about this for a long time. I've known about the game for a long time, and it came up in like a video essay at some point that I listened to while I was playing games. Like someone mentioned it, and I was like, oh yeah. And Elena actually brought it up. She's like, I read this while I was at work, because it's like I said, it's really short. So she read it on her lunch break on her phone. She's like, have you heard of this thing? And I was like, yeah, I have. Like I'm familiar with it. I've never read it. And she's like, dude, it's so weird. It is so weird. And she's like, but I heard there's a video game that like gives more context. And I was like, yes, I've heard of the game. That, like, and so we talked about that. That was like a month ago or so ago. And I had a similarly to you on Saturday. I had nothing to do. And Elena was out. So I was like, I'm going to read this book. And then I'm just going to sit down and see if I can't play this game. I didn't get through the whole thing. I only played like, I don't know, 30, 45 minutes of it. But I'm going to finish it. It's not particularly long. It's a pretty simple point and click adventure game. But
damn, I mean, that's kind of interesting and kind of cool. And I do like point and click adventure games. Is it difficult?
It's old school. So
it, like touch the bar, lick the bar, smell the bar, eat the bar.
I mean, it has all of the it's got like walk to, it's got look at, it's got push, it's got swallow, it's got give. So like, and there's like a lot of like different endings for the different scenarios, but like they're not like satisfying endings exactly. So for example, in the first one that I played, you can find like a punch bowl full of gasoline. And if you just drink it, the scenario ends because Am basically is like, I'm not gonna let you kill yourself. And then it just like boots you back to the title screen basically. And then you have to start over from the beginning. So I see like there's like a pretty like robust save system in it, as all old games are. I've been sort of playing it with a guide open because there's just some things that you would just never be able to know. Like I went into a room, looked around, was like, yep, nothing to see here. And then walked out. I was like, oh, turns out you had to push the pillow that's on the cot. And then behind the pillow is a gun. It's like, OK, yeah, I wasn't going to get that on my own. So.
Yeah, there's some weird things happening here, man, in the game.
But it's
again, interesting. And as someone who loves the old school Monkey Island games, would I be able to drink grog with my robot friends in this game?
That sounds a little too merry and joyous for what Am sort of has in store.
Well, I don't think you've ever tried grog before, which is basically rum, seawater, and turpentine. I made that whole thing up. I don't know.
Can I say something? I wish, so you know, I don't drink alcohol, but I wish I did so that I could have pirate drinks. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like I would love to have like drinks that pirates would have.
Yeah, yeah. This is what grog is according to a chef. Water, dark rum,
okay,
lemon or lime juice, cinnamon, honey, grapefruit juice, orange juice, pineapple juice, and club soda.
I don't know about I don't know what like dark rum tastes like, but that sounds good. That sounds like fun.
But the Royal Navy's grog recipe is water, dark rum, lemon juice, cinnamon.
Is there gasoline in there as well?
No turpentine. that was just in my brain. They made it in Monkey Island. In Monkey Island, they made it seem like it would burn through anything that you put it on. There's probably a plot point that you had to break a chain with it or something like that. So,
yeah.
Alas.
I think I'm in a dark era of my mind because this is the stuff I'm playing right now. I'm just like interested.
Yeah, what was
I'm
that
like,
other game you played with the priest?
Oh, Faith the Unholy Trinity.
Yeah. Okay. I think instead of having a top 10 hitbox games of the year, the top 5 most fucked up games you played this year.
Oh, I could do that for sure. I could for sure do that. That would be so fun.
And number one is Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League.
Ah, it was $3 this week. The deluxe digital edition was $3.
Hey, it's worth it.
Here's the thing. If the friends who I play online games with were like down for it, yeah, $3.
It's truly not a terrible game.
No.
Is it a good game? No, but like terrible? No, I wouldn't call it terrible.
But like I don't need a game to be incredible as the backdrop for just like chilling.
Right.
And like hanging out and talking, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel that.
They were not down. Justin, let's talk about the news.
All right.
I don't know, man. So it's the 30th anniversary of PlayStation this year. And so as a little treat, you can change the startup, the PS5 startup, so that it's like the PlayStation 1, 2, 3, or 4. But also it's for a limited time. So this is like not like a permanent thing. Okay. So I really don't know why they would do this. But again, only for a limited time. Like, I don't know why they would do that. Do you have any interest in this?
No. I mean, I don't think I have that nostalgia when it comes to PlayStation. And I know that sounds weird because I'm like PlayStation number one unapologetic fanboy. But like when I don't like necessarily have old school PlayStation stuff like ingrained in me as being what I need. Plus,
yeah.
Do you know what the sound is for me when I turn on my PlayStation?
Tell me.
I will hear a muffled beep from my upstairs room as my PlayStation in my downstairs area turns on and my portal starts up.
Yeah.
So I don't even quite frankly know what the sounds are anymore thanks to that. But it does seem like a weird thing for them to do. Like,
I guess I just don't understand the limited edition part of it.
Right. Like, what's the point?
Yeah. Because this is the sort of thing that I think people would really like to have, like just a permanent thing. You know what I mean? Just like have a little bit of customization there. But I just don't get it. And then there's like backgrounds too that kind of look PS1, PS2, PS3.
You know, old backgrounds are old. You know what I mean?
I guess so. But yeah, I don't know why this would be a limited thing, but I suppose it is. This is a very Nintendo move, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I was thinking of is this seems like two times recently that PlayStation did very like consumer first things that really don't like add much to their profit necessarily, but like seem to be like adding value and interest into their products. And I'm talking about the portal adding cloud support, which I think is something wasn't expected, but kind of cool to have for people who have it already. The people who have it, who also have PS Plus Premium, which is probably a clear intersect than I'm making it out to be. But also something like this is just like a fun thing for people who like PlayStation and love PlayStation. It's like that Astrobot has changed them and who they are.
But I know what you mean. I think that's a good way to say it. I will say Daniel Ahmad responded to this Shinobi tweet where Shinobi just like broke down what it is. Daniel Ahmad is a industry analyst saying these themes are so realistic. It's like stepping back in time. For example, I switched to the PS3 theme and the PSN immediately went down.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah. But yeah, there you go. If you're interested in that, I think that's just on the PlayStation menu. You can see it there. Justin, another news article you dropped here is from GamesIndustry.biz, which, by the way, editor-in-chief of GamesIndustry.biz is he's stepping down, and he says he might be leaving the games industry altogether.
Oh, no.
Which is kind of a bummer, because it's just like, that is a very common tale of people who are in the games industry right now. You know,
I mean, it's just condensing in these like websites. Like I love GamesIndustry.biz. That's always one of the ones I go to like look for stuff.
You get
like kind of a different type of news from that website, which is why I think it like adds well to a lot of the stuff we pick from. But that's just sad. I mean, like so often these websites just it's not profitable anymore in the traditional free way, but it's hard to get an audience in order to pay for stuff. I mean, look at any newspaper publication, things like that. They're all struggling in different ways. So this is just sad. So I hope, I hope the reason for leaving the games industry is not because it's a garbage truck on fire, but it's because that was a choice that they want to make.
I mean, I think it might be partially a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. It is tough. It is tough out there. And I think anyone who works in the games industry, specifically like games media, like I'm trying to look ahead to my future, right? Like just in general, I think we all are, right? But like, where do I go? What do I do? You know, I could never like have a family on the money I make. But then where do I go? Because there's no upward momentum, you know? But
Peter, I can't have a family on the money I make, so...
Well, how about you? How about this? Well, let's switch jobs. You can have my job and I'll have your job.
Ooh.
And then
would you take out my debts too, or would we have to live in the same houses?
Let's just like swap lives.
One thing, I will do that in a heartbeat if I can keep my wife, obviously. And
yeah, obviously they switch with us.
My dog as well. Would that be fair?
Yeah, that's fine. You can keep Archie.
Okay. I'm also thinking if this is a swap I want to make.
Yeah, just let me know. We can.
We should just one day show up to each other's job and just not even reference it.
Just say, what do you mean?
What are we talking about? Mr. Makovich, you look different today. New haircut?
But then basically you would just do exactly what I do in my meetings where I'm just like, there's nothing to report.
I think the footage of you just coming into the back of your room.
I did play that on
loop and they won't notice, right?
That's pretty good. But this report from GamesIndustry.biz says, a new report claims gamers spend more time watching videos about gaming than playing games. So this is by Vicky Blake. Just read you this a little bit here. Gamers are spending more time watching videos about gaming on YouTube and Twitch than playing games themselves. That's according to a new report by Media Research. That can't be right. Oh, not Media. Media. Anyway. Media Research, which concluded that gamers typically spend 7.4 hours a week gaming and 8.5 hours a week watching gaming-related videos. In the research, which Media claims highlights the untapped potential for game publishers to bring video content inside their own ecosystems.
Scary.
I know. Just like, why? I'll say this is good for my job. Because, hey, that's good to know that people are watching a shit ton of YouTube videos about video games. But how does this speak to you? Is this your experience?
I think this makes me think of a lot of things. None of it's bad necessarily, but I think when I was younger, my like veins for getting video game news was much smaller. We've talked mm-hmm. about G4 in the past and how when G4 was a television station that I finally got access to, it was kind of life-changing because it was a whole television channel dedicated to video games. And it made me like be aware of so many things that my knowledge of games didn't know of yet, like a whole type of different type of game. Because most of my video games was brought to me by my mom, who was a pretty big gamer back in the day. Mm-hmm. And like we played a lot of Nintendo stuff, but I still didn't really like go outside of Nintendo. And we were a Nintendo house because that's what we had. We just had Nintendo. We kept buying Nintendo. It was great. And plus, you know, kid friendly. Heyo.
Yeah.
But like once you start to like watch more about video games, you start to be more of an informed consumer. Once you start to not only look at reviews, but you talk about like people's opinions of it, watch their gameplays of it and everything like that. Like it really just kind of makes the thing that you're doing seem more legit. To a certain point.
Yeah.
And I remember that when we were kids in the unenlightened time of when we had like a Game Boy with limited amount of AAA batteries and one computer in the house with one CRT TV, we didn't have like a game on everything. We would actually like sit and watch each other play video games a lot. A lot of my experiences with watching Legend of Zelda was watching my sister play it. But then I got to a certain point when I'm like, ooh, I don't want to see too much. It's going to spoil me into this. But it was always fun to just sit and watch like my sister play games and like being able to like experience it as my little feeble brain and fingers couldn't quite handle the inputs yet. So I think it makes sense that there is something about the passive art of watching games versus the active task of playing games that can be more appealing to people, which is, I think, a sad thing for our society. We'd rather be passive consumers rather than active participants. But I think mm-hmm. it also just makes a lot of sense. Like I see this number and this is what my students do more so than play games, I'm sure. Watch games, watch videos, watch people talk about games and stuff. So I can't say it's surprising, but I don't necessarily think it's sad because I think there is some like, it makes sense to me why people like to watch games.
Yeah. I mean, like I watch a lot of gaming content. I think that makes sense as to like, given my job and all that, you know what I mean? I don't know if it's necessarily bad. I'm not saying that you're saying that it's bad, but I think a lot of people have said like, oh, what has it become? And I'm like, think about when people are watching stuff versus when they're playing games, right? Like, you know, if you are watching videos on your, you know, lunch break or whatever, or if, you know, first thing you do when you wake up in the morning, you look at your phone, spend 20 minutes, you know, scrolling, doing whatever. Like, to me, it would make sense then that, it makes sense then that people, their collective time might add up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Over like their actual like free time that they have to like sit down and like play a video game.
Because I so many things that I watch on social media or on my phone happen while I'm doing something else as like a background thing. Like I'm on season 5 of Better Call Saul. There's 6 of them. I started like a week and a half ago. So there you go. But I'll like put an episode on while I'm getting ready in the morning. I'll put an episode on while I'm doing the dishes. I'll put an episode on while I'm doing dinner and stuff like that. So I find it to be something that I'm filling my time that I normally would just watch random YouTube videos, with more active content. And I feel like if I'm watching like my favorite group do a Let's Play or something like that, I am more doing something rather than just scrolling on a random video.
Yeah. Which to my understanding, I don't watch like a lot of like Twitch streams, but like to my understanding, that's what a lot of people do with like streamers. They will put them on
while they're at work,
while they're doing something else.
Which is why like noon and early afternoon times are actually quite popular for that, because people put it on in the background while they're doing their 9 to 5.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's an interesting number. And again, I think it means, I think I'm gonna keep trying to have this job.
Yeah. Well,
we'll see.
On top of that too, like people make careers out of being Twitch streamers.
Yeah.
That's because people are watching. It's not just like one really rich person sitting there like throwing people money, but like Twitch streamers who stream games, even though I think a lot of Twitch is now moved a little bit more to lifestyle than gaming, but regardless,
I'll say if you're ever looking for good YouTube content that is like a highlight from the Twitch streamer, Doug, I think I've sent you some of his videos before. He always is so surprising to me with his creativity and how he looks at games and how he looks at like the medium of like Twitch as a like place to tell stories and to do interesting things with video games. The best video I've seen all year, I think, me and Alana watched it over the course of like 4 different dinners, is he, this is like last year before like ChatGPT, when ChatGPT was still in its infancy, he used it to, see if he could beat the Pajama Sam game.
Mm-hmm.
So he basically just like gave it voice commands, like telling the chat bot, like what options were at his disposal. And basically as the chatbot continued to play and got more information, it would go fucking crazy because it would just have too much info. You know what I mean? And so they would like have to like reboot it and stuff like that. It's hysterical. And it's awesome. Just like a fun, interesting way to like watch someone play a video game. I don't know. Like very, very cool. Very, very, interesting way of doing that. So if you're ever looking for good YouTube content, Doug is fucking phenomenal.
And he does this primarily on YouTube or on Twitch, but turns it into
videos. He does it on Twitch, but then he puts it on YouTube. But his YouTube uploads are not the full Twitch thing. It's just like the
highlights,
streamlined story of it. So like, I mean, the Pajama Sam one he does for like 8 hours. but he cuts it down. And like it being cut down is just like the most interesting parts of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm actually interested now in watching that.
It's great. It's great. It's very fun. And he's just such a good, he does such a good job at like storytelling, and stuff like that. Again, highly recommend. But, Justin, now that we're through the very, very huge news week that we had, let's take a look at some of the best games, according to Metacritic this year, because everything other than Indiana Jones for the most part is out. So we're able to actually like get a pretty good look at like what performed well here on Metacritic. I'm just going to read you the top, 10 here, top 10 performers on Metacritic, and we can sort of then go down the list if we want to. Also, it's worth taking as a grain of salt that, like, the number 1, 2, and 3 all have the same score, but they're just, like, I don't know how they're weighted. It must be, like, how, like, maybe the most reviews, you know? So, like, 139 on the first one.
It's how close they are to Sony. Oh, wait, no, that wouldn't work. Yeah, because Astrobot currently in... Oh, I'm spoiling it, but...
No, please.
So, the top three, and I'll tell you the connection. The top three, Astrobot, still on Sony, right? Elden Ring could have been on Sony. Metaphor should have been only on Sony. You know what I mean? Like, it's just the further away they get from Sony is the further away.
I see.
Yeah.
It might be based on the number of reviews, but I'm not sure. But so, yeah. So Astrobot,
that too.
Number one, Elden Ring, Shadow of the Erdtree at number two, and Metaphor, Re Fantasio at number three, all scored 94. Number four is Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, scored 92. Number five is UFO 50, scored 91. Number six is Animal Well, scored 91. Number seven is Satisfactory, scored 91. Number eight is Bellatro, scored 90. Number nine, The Last of Us Part Two Remastered, scored 90. And number 10, Thank Goodness You're Here, also scored 90. Also on this list, Tekken 8, Destiny 2, The Final Shape, some visual novel I'd never heard of, Tsukihime, A Piece of the Blue Glass Moon, gonna circle back to that, Horizon Zero, Forbidden West Complete Edition on the PC, Like a Dragon, Infinite Wealth, Castlevania Dominus Collection. Oh yeah, that was from earlier this year. Lorelei and the Laser Eyes, hey. Tactical Breach Wizards, Kill Knight, The Crimson Diamond, never heard of that. That's looks interesting. Shogun Showdown, Paper Mario Thousand Year Door Remake, Mullet Mad Jack, and Persona 3 Reload. That's on the first page here.
Top 24 there. Woo.
So what do you make of this?
So I think the year in games, and this is me going off of my feelings, not actual like statistics here, because I'm not going to pull them up. But it seems to me that there are a lot of good games, but the amount of those like higher 94s and above are limited this year. And I think overall, one of the things about this year in games is that there's a lot of really good games, but the transcendent games are not on this list to me.
What do you mean by that? Were there transcendent games from this year that didn't make it?
No, I mean like transcendent games that for years to come, we're going to be remembering these games as being pinnacles of the industry.
Yes. If I may just speak, and you know, we'll talk about this a little bit more in depth as we get to the end of the year here and have those discussions. But like, it's undeniable that some good games came out this year. But, you know, we talked last week about 2023, I think, or maybe it was 2022. And how good of a year 2023 and how good of a year that was, and how specifically catered to our specific tastes that year was. And like, for me, this has a lot fewer heavy hitters in terms of games that I'm going to be that have like really stuck with me. And I'm going to be thinking about a lot for, you know, years to come. Whereas 2023 was like banger after banger after banger after banger for me personally.
Yeah, I agree. And like, I think a lot of these games, like your top five are Astrobot, a character platformer, Elden Ring, yep, a masochist simulator, Metaphor, a JRPG, Final Fantasy VII, a JRPG action e-game, and then UFO, yeah, fucking 50, which is like the most indie of indie experiments, yes, out there. And those are like such, I think, vast types of games to be in the top five of so many different genres and so many different things that people would like and want to play, that I think part of the problem this year when we're going to be going through our list together is that it really comes down to specific individual taste more so than what are just the widely accepted bangers of the year.
Yeah, because I've seen a lot of people saying like, oh, there were no good games this year. And again, I disagree.
I disagree too.
However, I think that like, but by me saying that like, oh, they just weren't catered to my tastes, it's the sort of thing where like, the difference between what I'm saying and what like randos online are saying is that like a lot of people just see gaming as like this very narrow, like AAA landscape. You know what I mean? Where it's like, okay, where the highly cinematic third person narrative adventures from Sony is all that they can imagine as being what video games are, you know? And so this was a terrible year for that. Did a single fucking game like that come out? Hellblade 2?
I mean, to me, the most that kind of game is shockingly, surprisingly, against all oddsly, Elden Ring.
Yeah, like the most mainstream. Like
so look at this list, like that's probably the most mainstream, followed by Final Fantasy VII, followed by maybe Astrobot, but even that's a specific kind of taste. Like that's nuts to me, that the fact that Bellatro is like nominated for Game of the Year. And it's not that it doesn't deserve it. It like does deserve it. Like that's just kind of a crazy shocking thing to me.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Yeah, and like that speaks to its quality, but I also think it speaks to the fact that there was at least one slot in that, you know, TGA Game of the Year list that was, they were like, I don't know, what the fuck do we do? People seem to like Bellatro a lot,
right?
You know what I mean?
yeah.
yeah, I 100% agree. I don't know, like, yeah, you know, looking at this year, like, I have games that I liked, but yeah, there are only a handful of really big standouts that I'm like, this game really spoke to me. You know, I think, like, it's no secret, the big one for me is Lorelei and the Laser Eyes. Mm-hmm. That game, like, I still really, I hold in really, really high regard as probably one of the best puzzle games maybe I've ever played. It's up there with Oberdin for me. We're going to see how well that holds in my mind over, you know, the next year or so as we go further, but I can't get over how much I like that game.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's a game I want to try. I know I won't love, but like I want to try, and this is why I won't love it.
It's coming to the PlayStation,
but it's not a Switch. But it'd be bigger on the Portal.
It's true. It'll probably look better too.
Ooh, it'd feel better in my hands.
Yeah.
I did a 2-hour treadmill walk yesterday while playing Dragon Age.
That's the way to go, though.
I mean, it really is. Like, I don't know how I lived without it.
yeah.
But, like, I mean, there are so many, like, different types of things in here. I mean, Satisfactory. Do I need to play Satisfactory, Peter?
I mean, it's a very specific type of game. It's been around for a long time. It's been in early access. I bet, as the title suggests, I bet it's really satisfying. You know what I mean? Like yeah, to just like, you know, go out, farm materials, and then make things to build your factory and all that. Like, to me, it seems like it scratches a similar itch as like Minecraft,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, of you get a big server with your friends, you just make, if you got in on it, I would absolutely get in on it as well.
That could be our personality.
What do you mean? Becoming factory people,
like obsessed with it. That's all we do. Like right now, it's on my phone. I'm just playing it on my phone as we're going here, a factory simulator game.
I mean, I'm watching this trailer on Metacritic because it just plays here, and like, dude, I would fuck with this.
Yeah. Speaking of, we could always go to the dark end of Metacritic here. I want to touch back on a couple games for Metacritic.
Yeah, go ahead.
Microsoft Flight Simulator 2024.
Yeah, that seemed like it would have been something big.
My
shoe-in
to get me some good points on my Fantasy Critic. It is 15 critic reviews. It's a 78.
Yeah, that's rough.
On Metacritic. And like we talked about, like the launch issues might have been part of that reason. While there was a release of a review from Checkpoint Gaming of a 90 on December 2nd, the trend of 75s and lower seems to be still happening. V Games gave it a 75 on December 2nd. Worth Playing said it's barely worth playing at a 60 on December 2nd as well. So,
oof.
Yeah, this really kind of bit me in the butt, didn't it?
That's unfortunate.
It is.
I'm sorry to hear that, but yeah, I had imagined that would have been a pretty big win. I'll say that in terms of like DLC, though, if I may, it was a good year for DLC for previously existing games. Like the Diablo expansions performed really well. The Alan Wake expansion stuff performed really well. Obviously, Shadow of the Erdtree performed really well. So, I mean, like, this was a good year for, like, additional content for already good games, if that makes sense.
That's what the tone when you said that.
No, it did. I mean, like I liked it. I loved it even, but for me, it's just not
it's
to be
not
considered a
game of the year
release,
contender.
You know? No. It is interesting, though, just, like, scrolling through, like, seeing the scores for a lot of these sorts of things. Can I say something, and like this is said with a lot of nuance and coming from the perspective of someone who does this for work?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think people are too kind to video games in their reviews. Like in scrolling through a lot of these things, like, you know, everyone is entitled to their opinions, and I do believe that, And I'm not here to like, I'm not trying to like argue with people's opinions or like really like wade into review discourse like right now exactly. But like, I do look at a lot of these games that, that score, you know, pretty well. And I'm like, dang, like what did people see in this thing that, that like I just didn't, you know what I mean?
What do you have a high like scoring game in like the high 80s that you're thinking of?
Let me go back to the high 80s because I'm just like
again,
cycling through.
Or
like,
we're not like, shitting on games here, but like just as an
I'm just saying like if you were to be really honest with how a game should score, you know, and really establish like a voice in terms of like what you think should score really well and stuff like that. Let me see. I mean, like Stellar Blade got an 81. Mm-hmm. Like I think that game probably should score closer to a 6 or a 7. You know what I mean? In terms of what it's going for and what it's sort of about. Let's see here. I mean, I know you talked about like Dragon Age and stuff like that. Like, do you think that that where I just saw that? Do you think that that game 82 sits well in 82?
It's hard to say. Because I mean, the whole thing has to go with how things are scored in the world. I think that is a pretty quality game. And like, what are we looking for? Like what makes a 100 or a 90, a 90, what makes a 80 an 80, what makes a 70, a 70? Because I mean, is it based on how clean the game is, how innovative the game is, how graphically aesthetic the game is, the style between the game? But I do feel like,
so yeah, all of that,
right? Like, I think it's like a mixture of all that kind of stuff together. And does that mean that because on average you're below average means that you're an 80? Again, I don't know. I think we are conditioned that if you have something that's a 60 or lower, you're dog shit.
Right.
And
just because of school, right? Like
mostly because of school. I mean, even think about how we play Fantasy Critic. The barometer of positive is 70
good
and
point,
higher,
good point.
Right? Anything lower than a 70 gives you negative points. Trust me, I know. This year, more so than most people. And I think that when people are being kind to games, I just think that like some people just have different. Strong likes of different things that might not be what everyone else's is. And it's really hard. Like, I mean, we've talked about like doing competitive speech in which people rank based on their own opinions. And there are some people are frankly just wrong. But one thing I've learned about that activity over years and years, there are certain styles that certain people like, and you try to cater to those certain people as best you can. So for example, Like a Dragon, Infinite Wealth, I have played better JRPGs this year.
Sure.
I have played better JRPGs ever when it comes to that. But why is that an 89? But I think some people are so connected in love to Like a Dragon and the Yakuza games that this game is this weird intersection of these fandoms that really excites people because it is playing on the new and the old in a very overt way. The stories are epic, the way they tell those stories. The gameplay is fun. The music isn't as good as the first game. But like, there's enough stuff about it that I think would make people say that this is one of the best one of these that I've played in a long time. When I play that game, I'm like, it's fine. It's good. Yeah. But is it bad? Would I give it a 60? No.
Right. Well, but I guess that's the thing, right? Like for me, I don't think a 60 is bad. You know, but because like, OK, perfect example here. Warhammer 40K Space Marine 2. It's an 82 on Metacritic.
That seems great. High, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bought this full price because everyone was saying like, damn, game of the year fucking contender here. And like, you know, again, everyone is entitled to their opinion. But like, guys, it's not like it's not, it's a fine enough game, but like, I would probably give it a 6 out of 10. Not a bad game, but not something that like I've ever thought about since putting it down. You know what I mean? I certainly, and again, we're going to talk about this a little bit more in our bonus episode about like comparing review scores where like, it doesn't necessarily work one-to-one to say like, oh, well this game scored this, you know, doesn't mean that they're the exact same. But like in this context, I think it's apt because I think they're comparable. Helldivers 2 scored an 82. So like the general consensus is that Helldivers 2 and Warhammer Space Marine 40, whatever it is, 2 are like of the same quality. Right. And like you are to get the same exact sort of like feeling out of them in terms of walking away from them. And like, I simply disagree. And that's my opinion. Right. And people are welcome to disagree with my opinion, you know, but it's always interesting. And like I said, I just think that games tend to score higher than they deserve, just because I think people overestimate and are just a little too kind to games. When I think that as a critic and a reviewer, you should expect more from games. I've never given a review score that's I've regretted because it was too low. I've definitely given scores too high that I've regretted.
Speaking of things that are too high, does it make you feel bad that if you were to purchase Space Marine 2 today, instead of spending $70,
yeah,
you'd spend 50?
Not
as bad as it could be, right?
Yeah. Did I spend $70 on that game?
According to all these prices, yes.
Absolutely fucking insane.
Yeah.
I mean, like, yeah. It's a fine game. It's fun enough, but like, never thought about it again.
You could have bought the collector's edition for $102.
Yeah, I definitely didn't do that. Although it was trying to make me do it, the digital one that was $100. Yeah. I was like, no, because the PS5 store is like so difficult to like navigate.
It is. Like, what is up with that?
Yeah, I don't know why. I don't know why that sucks so bad.
You know what also these scores make it abundantly clear with me, other than people are too nice in scoring, which, trust me, as a teacher, sometimes I feel like horrible giving out a D. Someone's like, I didn't do D work. And I'm like, that's what the grade said. It should have been lower. The Last of Us. How many different fucking, like, scores has The Last of Us got? Because this is the part 2 remastered came out, right? So
yeah,
we have The Last of Us Part 1 scored an 89. The Last of Us Remastered scored a 95. The Last of Us Original scored a 95. Like, how do you make those determinations? If people don't think that scores are just a random number, that's such an arbitrary difference. The remastered version is worse than The Last of Us Part 1 with improved everything. Is it just because you're playing the same game? How do you quantify that in terms of a review score?
Wait, so The Last of Us Part 1 is an 89. The Last of Us Remastered is an 85.
95.
The Last of Us, 95. The Last of Us Original is 95.
Yeah.
So, you're saying The Last of Us Part 1 is a worse game than The Last of Us Remastered or the original?
Correct.
Yeah, because it's not, right? I mean, and obviously we know that that's not how review scores work, and that's not what they're saying.
Correct.
But, that's a good point, though, about just, like, how do you look at that, right? Even like The Last of Us Part 2 in 93, The Last of Us Part 2 Remastered 90,
right? You know? Right, like only generally favorable by the users,
which I will say, I mean, I think that like shows that, like, you know, you release the same game again, it's not going to score the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is not going to score the same. If you run the same thing, you know, again, it is going to be different. But yeah, it is unfortunate that this series has sort of like got this reputation for just like releasing and re-releasing and re-releasing itself, because like these games are good. The remaster is good. The original is like good. It all works just fine. You know, I think people just don't like playing games that like were made on the PlayStation 3 because they think that that's old and bad.
Old games are old, man.
I guess so, but not the fucking Last of Us.
I think there is that newness factor too to certain games, that the first time you play something, it seems to be new and exciting. And then if you play that again, like, it may be not as new and exciting to play.
Yeah. Well, it's a thing, right, where like The Last of Us was so revolutionary and interesting. And then now every video game is trying to be that. And so like going back to it now, you're like, oh yeah, like I've seen this before. You know, because you have, because not only have you played it, but then also because, well, now God of War is The Last of Us, and Plague Tale is The Last of Us, and Hellblade is The Last of Us. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Or even like a Call of Duty campaign. Like, what is the top scoring campaign of all time? Let's see.
It's going to be hard to find. Yeah.
Just a quick thing here. Call of Duty 2, let's just use that as an example, came out on Xbox 360. That was World War II, I think. Call of Duty 2.
Yep.
Like, that was probably fucking immaculate to play back in the day.
Is that the one that Steven Spielberg wrote or directed?
I mean, probably. That would make sense, wouldn't it? Let me see. Call of Duty 2.
Or did he... He has a... Or was it Medal of Honor that he was...
Maybe Medal of
Honor. Medal
of Honor. Yeah.
That he was... He worked on, but...
But, like, even something like that, like, that doesn't, like, hold up as games age and stuff like that. Like, sure, it was probably new and exciting then, but, like, as you play Call of Duty, Black Ops 6, is that what we're on?
Yeah, it's what we're on.
We keep going forward with that. Like, is that campaign worse than Call of Duty 2?
Probably. To be entirely honest, because, I mean, like, you think about, like, what these studios have done, right? And, like, so much care and attention was given to Call of Duty 2's campaign, I imagine, that maybe, I'm not saying that people don't, but, like, no one, like, worked hard on the campaign for Call of Duty Black Ops 6, but it is that thing where it's like, hey, no one plays this. You know, the vast minority of players are going to see the end of this campaign. Like, so why put all this effort and work into it, you know, to make it like a really, really great story and all that sort of stuff if no one's going to play it? I think like, to your point though, like, it is something that's frustrating for me that, like, people don't want to play older games, you know, because, like, there is a level of jank to them. You know, I'm playing this 90s point and click adventure game and it's frustrating. And there are, like, old school problems with it that, like, have just been optimized out of this sort of thing, you know? But, like, for me, I'm just willing to forgive that because I know that it's a product of its time. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so for, like, The Last of Us 1, like, that's a game that, like, does it look the best? Does it have the most cutting edge performances nowadays? No, of course not. But it is excellent, you know? And in my opinion, I don't need the most accurate facial capture in order for a video game to be emotionally effective. 1000 Times Resist looks like a bunch of fucking Playmobil guys. And that game is an incredible story with an incredible narrative because the voice acting is excellent and the writing is excellent. You know what I mean? It reminds me of, do you know, like, a Corridor Digital?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They make YouTube videos, like, if you're not familiar, listener, they make YouTube videos that are like Stuntman Reacts and, like, we made this, blah, blah, blah. They went down this, like, rabbit hole of, like, using, like, shitty AI to we fixed anime using AI, whatever. One of their things that they did, the last thing I saw from them that I can remember was, like, we used AI to fix video game faces. And so they took a lot of, like, characters that were from, like, they took, like, Solid Snake from the original Metal Gear Solid, or they took, like, you know, characters from, like, PlayStation 2 games and whatever, and, like, quote unquote fixed them so that they can, like, look more realistic and, like, emote better. And they say at the beginning of the video, like, you just can't relate to a face that doesn't look like a human. And I'm like, have you ever read a book, motherfucker? Like, what are you talking about? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's that thing where, like, this reliance on, okay, insane graphics need to be in every single video game in order for a performance to be good. And that's just not true. You know what I mean? Similarly, like, you know, we were talking about this with the Game Award nominations where, like, you know, all of the actors, the best performances in video games, come from the AAA high budget, like, performance capture performances and not from anything else, because I think people, like, can't fathom the idea that you could have a good performance if it's not, like, capturing the minute details of your eyebrows.
And it's just easier for us to, like, attribute, like, someone's performance to what they're, like, visibly 100%. Doing if we can see it and stuff like that. Was the Quarter Crew talking about, like, the Uncanny Valley, or are they talking about, like, because
not really. I mean, they were just talking about, like, these old games look like fucking dog shit, don't you think? And it's like, no, they don't. they don't. Or like, yeah, I guess they do, but, like, it's like, Solid Snake, I've never played the original Metal Gear Solid, right? Or any of them for that matter. But like, did people not relate to those characters in that original game when it came out? Of course they did.
Right.
And you didn't need, because they didn't know that, you know, fancier graphics were coming down. You know what I mean? But like, it's this idea that like, it's impossible to relate to a face that you can't like 100% see, you know?
Can you imagine people going to space with the technology about as strong as a calculator?
Calculator? Insane.
Like,
insane.
Why would you even do that? We have better supercomputers out there that can get us there faster, safer, more efficiently. Why would we do it with a calculator? They were so stupid back then.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's just such a dumb, like, idea. Or not, it's not a dumb idea. It's a fine enough idea. But, like, to frame it in such a way of, like, this is shitty and bad. Mm-hmm. And it's the same argument that people I see people make about, like, The Last of Us Remastered. Well, why would you play Remastered if The Last of Us Part 1 is there? I mean, now, if you have access to both, yeah, I would say that The Last of Us Part 1 is a visual upgrade. Right. Like if you're trying to get the most out of those performances and see, again, the minute twitches in their eyebrows. Yes. The Last of Us Part 1 is going to do it. But if you have The Last of Us Part 1 and don't want to pay $70, or if you have The Last of Us Remastered and don't want to pay $70 for Part 1, just play Remastered. It's great. Like the performances are still good. Like the facial performance, like the facial capture, they still did it. It's still good. It's not like, it's not on the level of The Last of Us Part 2 or Part 1, mm-hmm. obviously, but like, if you played that game in 2013 or whenever that came out, I think 2013, and you felt something, there's a reason for that. And it's not because, and like, you didn't feel something even deeper with The Last of Us Part 2 because you could see like twitches in the face or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, it's, I love people, who are negative. Like me.
It's fine. It's so frustrating.
How negative I can be.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Am I being negative?
No, I was saying I'm being negative, not you.
Oh, I see.
But is,
which, like, I'm willing to hear, like, you know what I mean? No, like, I don't know, maybe it, I'm off it, base.
No. But it's so much easier for people to look back and hate on things rather than for people to look for the good in things too.
Yeah. And to just say like, oh, this is old, it's bad.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, give it a shot. You know what I mean? Try it out. Like, you know, of course there's going to be some jank to it. It's a little bit older, but like, it's impossible for you to see what people could have liked about this. I don't know.
Do you think there's value in playing today? If I had choice to play The Last of Us, what should I play? The first one. What should I play?
I mean, do you if you had both copies in front of you, which one should you grab?
I have only one choice.
But like I'm saying, like, do you have access to Last of Us Part 1?
Yeah, but I can only play one.
I see what you're saying.
Get snapped out of existence. Thanos smacks you across the face.
Then yeah, I guess The Last of Us Part 1. I mean, like it looks better and it gets those performances across a little bit better because it looks good. But like the upgrade, like the difference between the two is not so great that there's like a clear choice. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because I think like for me, it's almost like, what's that cave analogy, the allegory of the cave, right? Like you have the people standing there and then you're enjoying your view, right? The shadows looks really cool until the guy gets up and turns around and is like, oh my God, there's this whole world out there. But it's like, why would I look at that? And I feel like part of like playing old games is to kind of get a picture to how things have progressed.
100%.
But I also think, like, when you're playing an old game, I think you're best served not rushing through the last thing and building up with where you started and how you got there. Because it doesn't mean that the old game is bad. It's just that sight that you have of the future impacts what you think of that past image, that past game or something like that. Like, I'm thinking Metal Gear Solid. If I would have played the Metal Gear Solid, if I played the GameCube redo of it instead of the original one first, I probably would have liked the game the same. I would have probably said the same things about it. But going back and playing that original one at any point, I would have been like, this is just straight up bad.
Yeah. Well, it's the same thing about the Resident Evil 4 thing, right? Like, I think being able to go back and play that original one still
just reaffirms how
really
right
interesting.
I am. I'm just kidding.
But it's interesting, right? To be able to say like, oh, like I see what this had, you know, whether or not you like it, I think is a whole different conversation. But I think being able to actually being able to see it and appreciate it and say like, okay, I understand how this changed everything versus you know, the remake is fine, but it's a completely serviceable remake of one of the most influential games of all time. And so it obviously it cannot be that again. It cannot capture that again, because now all games are based on that original game, you know? And so like even the remakes of 2 and 3 are based on Resident Evil 4, you know? But it's that thing where like I think being able to appreciate and understand and go like, oh, I see what this was and what this did is hugely important. But
so it goes.
I think so it goes. I think that's gonna wrap it up for us today. Huge news week, I know. So if you're looking for more of these rambling conversations, we've got more of them on Patreon for our deluxe podcast producers like Jane Old, GKS, and Josh Durham. If you're interested in joining the ranks, that's $3 a month. You can get those additional bonus episodes. I mean, we're well over 100 bonus episodes you've got access to. Many, many, many hours of additional content from us, should that be something you're interested in. If not, that's fine. You can support us on Twitter by giving us a follow there, liking this episode, in rating this episode in your podcast player of choice, rather. Am I forgetting anything, Justin?
Nope, you're forgetting to probably should stop eating leftovers if it's Wednesday today and you're listening to this and you're still sitting there
at that point
with your turkey leg, vat of Jell-O. Don't.
Jell-O doesn't expire, though? Isn't it like honey?
Maybe the box Jell-O doesn't, right. But if it's in my fridge and covered with fruit and marshmallows.
Yeah, that'll go bad eventually.
Probably go bad pretty quick, specifically if you just leave it out.
Yeah. All right, we'll catch you next week. Always remember, old games are old. Bye.
Bye.
I'll stop recording.